Okay, everybody, welcome to another day of Spiritual Truth. Another, I should have said not another. I am here with author Mr. Spina, Ed Spina. And we've not met before, so we're having like about a 3-minute conversation. Maybe not even that long, right?
That's correct.
And so we're going to get to know him together because I've lost my notes. So I know you wrote a book, something about a warrior?
Yes, Mystic Warrior.
And
Beyond Time and Space.
Okay, and what's it about, like energy or UFOs or what?
It's a thriller in the Bourne Ultimatum type genre, but with spiritual overtones.
Okay, so are you a person who believes in the spiritual world?
Sure, I'm a mystic.
Okay, now here we go, there you go, I didn't know that. So you're a mystic, and what does that mean that you're a mystic? You mean something different to everybody else?
Yes, everyone seems to have a different idea what a mystic is.
Yeah.
But mysticism is a spiritual discipline aimed at direct communion with God or the ultimate reality. And every religion has mystics, like the Christian mystics, Jewish mystics would be the Kabbalists, the Islamic mystics are Sufis, and you got the yogis of the Buddhist and Hindu religion. So every religion has their own mystics, and what these mystics study are the universal laws that apply no matter what time, era, or cultural beliefs. And they study these universal laws, which by definition are always true, and they practice, besides studying these laws, they practice various things, predominantly meditation, conduct exercises meant to help you attune and directly connect with God.
Okay, so here's my first question. You mentioned the Sufis. I've always watched them, and sometimes I'll just see them spin and spin and spin, and I'm thinking, what the heck? You know, I mean, I understand the Kabbalah mystics, I understand the Christian mystics, but the Sufis, and so... Are the Sufis who are practicing their mysticism, practicing the same kind of mysticism as the Catholic mystic or the Christian mystic or the Hindu mystic, the yogis or the Kabbalists, or, you know, are they all, is it the same thing? They just look different, act different, what?
Yeah, you can think of them as somewhat different paths to get to the ultimate reality of connecting with God. The Sufis, the one that most people are familiar with, are the whirling dervishes that spin around.
And the white clothes with the white hats, is that, you know, the white turbans?
That would be them too.
Yeah.
And that's basically to try to go beyond the mind to direct experience and direct experience of God. But there are other branches of the Sufis which they emphasize love,
mm-hmm.
The devotion to God, chanting the name of God. They have 108 names, or no, 99 or 100, no, 90, I can't remember how many, but different religions have different numbers of names for God. And by chanting the names and that, that's they bring themselves closer to God. It's more similar to the yogis who practice bhakti yoga, you know, devotional yoga,
mm-hmm.
that help get there.
And it's the Catholic mystics or the Christian, I only know the Catholic ones, they do like this with the stigmata. Is that, Padre Pio? I mean, listen, I am not a scholar on mysticism. Dr. DeNicholas used to do a lot of shows before he got very ill, and he used to talk about mystics, and he wrote, 30, 40 books on mysticism. I'm sorry to say, I'm not a scholar of it, didn't read a whole lot of them, but explain more about mysticism, which will get us to why you wrote this book. So you're a mystic. What kind of mystic are you?
Well, I'm a universal. I borrow from each of the different religions, certain things that I like. Some of my favorite authors were some of the ones that wrote at the early turn of the century, in the 19th century. William Walker Atkinson also wrote under the pen name Yogi Ramacharaka. And it's kind of a universal mysticism. And one of his most famous books is Mystic Christianity, where he describes Jesus' mission from a mystic perspective,
mm-hmm.
and how he was not merely the founder of a religion, but it was a whole way of life. And if you just extracted his lessons and his teachings, you know, every religion could be founded on the same, you know, frontiers, the same...
Yeah. I mean, the Jesuits know the same things as the people who study the Kabbalah, as the people who study the Quran, the Kabbalah and Quran, same neighborhood, yes, no?
The Quran is the Muslim holy book.
That's what I'm saying, but don't they kind of say, I mean, the Jesuits know the same thing as the Kabbalists, as the people who, the Quran, I mean, if you looked at their secrets that nobody ever really gets to see except a few, wouldn't they all sort of say the same thing?
Exactly, that's the whole point, is the mystics is not considered a religion, it's really considered a spiritual discipline, which you can be any religion, and you can choose any one path you want to go to, but the universal laws that the mystics study are always true. Those are the ones. The law of attraction would be one that the people are most familiar with,
And what are the other laws?
Well, the law of attraction, that's like the most obvious one, but everything is energy is the one that I focus on.
Okay.
Which is like even predate, or not predates, but forms the basis of the law of attraction.
So then, tell me the one you focus on the energy one. Tell me how that works for you, me, him, her, anybody out there.
As human beings, we exist on many different levels. We have a physical body, emotional, mental, spiritual bodies. Ultimately, we are all just, each of us is a single point of awareness in the oneness, which is what mystics are striving to connect with. The oneness, the one, God, the best name for God is the one. So everything is energy. Within each of these different energy bands of energy, physical, emotional, there are higher and lower vibrational energies. The energies, emotions of hatred, fear, anger, those are lower vibrational energies. And if you want to transmute them and be able to get closer to God and in the process become, improve your life and improve your state of being, you want to flush away the lower, denser vibrational energies and replace them with the higher energies, which more closely correspond with love, joy, happiness, bliss. And that's what I concentrate on.
How hard is that to do? I mean, we are spiritual beings, and you've heard this is such a now catchphrase. I remember when I first heard it, I was a young girl. We're spiritual beings in the human condition. So,
yes.
So the human condition is a really hard condition to break out of or exist in. It really is. And especially like right now. These are really rough times. So there's going to be a lot of fear, anger. Let's just take this Madoff man, just because he's on the front page of all the internet things today. There's a lot of people hating him because he ruined their lives, they say. So how does mysticism work for people like that who have, in our eyes, in the world, the kingdom of the human condition? Wouldn't you be afraid or angry, or are those not valid feelings?
Yeah, it's natural to feel. Well, fear, anger, those are natural human conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But as spiritual beings living a human existence, as opposed to being human beings, mere human beings, we want to transcend these emotions, not deny them, but go beyond them to a higher world and then at the same time be practical and bring these higher vibrations and these higher teachings down to the mundane world where we'll affect the world and make it a better place. To create the heaven on earth. So it's not enough just to think theoretically, oh, we'll think these nice thoughts, and the whole idea is to think these nice thoughts and bring the energy down, anchor it onto the earth here, and act upon these teachings.
So how would one go about it today? How would one, if you're someone out here listening is unhappy or afraid of something, how are they going to get, their next car payment made or whatever they might be afraid of today? Or maybe they're afraid of a person or they're angry. What would they do? What would they start doing today?
Okay, well, I specifically developed my Energy Center Clearing Package to help people to do this. It's a CD, it's a combination meditation and energy clearing package, which flushes the denser energies away, which lead to fear, anger, stress, and hatred, and replaces them with the higher energies. And the reason I can do this is because I've had some very advanced teachers and advanced souls that have taught me over the years and passed it on to me such that, I can now pass it on to other people and actually infuse the CD with some of this energy, that higher vibrational energy that lets people feel better. It's like being meditation, only it's a supercharged. It would be like meditating in a room full with mystics. A room full of mystics, which are all meditating and vibrating together, making the energy a little stronger.
So, by listening to the CD or any CD that's meditating, like the big Om, that kind of thing.
Right. Well, Om is a good choice you made there. Om. There are certain sacred vowel sounds. Om is the most famous one, which is from the Buddhist and Hindu perspective, that's the sound of creation.
Hmm.
That actually activates one of your energy centers. In the Eastern schools, there are seven energy centers, the seven chakras, major chakras, which run along your spine, from your base of your tailbone up above your head to the crown chakra. In the Western schools of mysticism, there are 14 energies, or there are 12 energy centers, which correspond with the seven chakras, but which are more closely allied with the various glands in your body. For example, in the heart chakra of Eastern thought would be broken into two different energy centers in the Western schools. It'd be the heart and the thymus, which is in the breastbone above the heart. In the Western schools, it's usually a gland or an organ, or it's always a gland or an organ or a ganglia.
Why is that?
Well, the chakras are kind of abstract. And for people coming from a Western perspective, they've heard about this and that, but unless they're really devoted followers of the Eastern traditions, it's not easy to comprehend what's it, this chakra, this is this thing, what is it? I never heard of it. There's no chakra in my body. But from a Western, if I say, yes, your heart or your thymus or your pineal glands or your pituitary, and they secrete hormones, that's what animates your body. And that's also the passageway to the higher worlds and the higher planes of in which you exist as a human being.
So as Catholic kids, we were taught that we should always hit, you know, our thymus, but they didn't tell us it was our thymus. I learned this later by the Jesuits. They said, you know, when you're in Mass, you know, I went to Catholic school. Uh-huh. I said, yes. And they said, and they would say, you'd hit yourself and say, you know, through my fault, through my fault, through my fault, three times. It's right above the heart. It's right in the thymus area. I said, yes. I said, really, what you were doing is you were hitting your thymus so you'd be healthy, because in the early, you know, 15th, 16th century, they needed people to live longer and work so they could create money and churches and stuff. And that was a way of keeping you healthy, is to hit your thymus three times a day. They made it a ritual.
No, that's actually a great idea, because the thymus is where you produce the T cells, which are used to protect you against infection. So by tapping the thymus, you're actually stimulating the T cell production. And on the higher levels, it also deals with healing. So, you know, the Jesuits are the intellectuals of the Catholic religion. They know what they were talking about.
How clever is that, right? We're sitting there going, through my fault, through my fault, through my fault. And we're really hitting our thymus glands so we can live longer and keep working out in the fields for them in the 15th
century. Well, let's hope it's not only for ulterior motives, but actually to make you healthier.
Yeah, well, that's what they were doing, but we started laughing when the Jesuits taught us that. I mean, it's like, you know, there's all kinds of interesting ways that they do things. Now, what about the adrenals? Are they part of the...
Yes, the adrenals are part of the thing. They would correspond with the base chakra in the Eastern thought, but the adrenals regulate the flight or fight syndrome, which is what happens when you are, you know, competition or a grizzly bear or whatever comes up. It produces adrenaline, and so that's how it connects directly with the fight or flight. And then from the Eastern perspective, the fact that it's connected with the base chakra, which is concerned with survival instincts, it makes perfect sense.
And where are those located?
They're sitting atop your kidneys, on both sides of your body. You have two adrenals sitting on top of your kidneys.
So activating all these chakras or these, you know, these glands are doing what for us spiritually? What are they doing for us? I mean, if we, you know, through my fault, so we're hitting our thymus and we're staying healthy. I mean, what are we doing? I understand in the human condition why they're making us stay healthy, but what is it doing for us in the spiritual world?
Well, each of the different energy centers has a different energy function. The adrenal is the fight or flight. The kidney would be which detoxes you. You know, it excretes, is how you... The urine cleanses the body and the waste products are put into your kidney. It detoxes you, and also, if on a higher plane, the kidneys are where you store fear. So by cleaning out your kidneys, by cleaning out energetically your kidneys, it will help to get rid of the waste products that have accumulated in your kidneys, and it'll make you healthier. And because we are spiritual beings living a human existence, we want our human body to be the temple for our soul. We want it to be clean and pure as possible, so it doesn't get in the way of us communing with God.
So a dirty body that smokes, drinks, and takes drugs and doesn't take care of itself really isn't... It's harder for them to be more spiritual?
It's making it harder. It's just another obstacle. It's not impossible. You know, there are people that have smoked, and the American Indians, they smoke as a matter of part of their religious ceremonies and that.
Yeah.
So it's not... But it's not... constant chain smoking, pumping tar and nicotine into your body kind of thing. but anything. Your body is the temple of your soul. Why would you pollute it? Just there's no need to do that.
So a mystic stays pretty clean. I mean, they just really keep their mind, body. That's where you get the mind, body, and soul.
Right. They correspond. I mean, I'm not pristine, pure. I love microbrewed beers, for example. That's my weakness.
You what? What do you love?
Microbrewed beers.
Oh, my God. I don't know what that is.
American pale ales.
Oh, the beer.
Pale ale and stone pale ale and all these delightful pale ales. I love those. But, again, I know that every time I do that, my body has to work a little harder to get rid of the toxins that I've accumulated, the alcohol in particular.
Okay, so now okay, let's just say we've got these clean bodies and you're working your chakras and energy. So then that gets you to a place where you can be more spiritual and commune with God and become a mystic? I mean, I think we kind of went off track, but I was trying to understand what the chakras and all this stuff has to do with being a mystic.
Yes. Okay, now some of the higher energy centers, your pituitary gland, which corresponds to the third eye of the Eastern thought, and your pineal gland, which corresponds with your crown chakra, both of those are located in the center of your brain, and they're separated, you know, just a few centimeters or millimeters, whatever the distance is, and they're connected with the thalamus or the hypothalamus. I forget which one it is. Mm-hmm. But those are the ones that are more concerned with clairvoyance, astral visions, with all the more spiritual-oriented aspects of your life.
So when you're a mystic, you really got to worry about what's going on with your body.
Well, you should take care of it. There's no need to pollute it or, you know, harm it, whatever. It doesn't help you to get anywhere. It's not that, you know, you can drink your caffeinated drinks and everything else, but just why make it harder to connect with God? That's my theory.
Okay, so now we've cleaned out our body, and we're, so Om is the one spiritual vibration. What are some of the other ones?
Well, Rama. You find them in the various prayers from whatever religion. They touch upon them. They'll mention them.
Well, you know, just to bring it back to like Earth so people understand what we're talking about, there's a show, remember Tina Turner? She leaves Ike Turner, and all of a sudden she becomes a Buddhist, and she starts chanting this thing all the time, chanting this chant in this movie. I can't even remember what the chant is. But in the movie, it's supposedly her true story, and it's pretty close to truth. And she's a big Buddhist now, I guess, but she chants it all the time. Now, these chants supposedly changed her life and made her just feel great. Is it in your mind, or do they really work?
No, they really work. Well, you heard music soothes a savage beast. You know, it's known that, you know, nice rhythmic sounds, they can help plants grow, they calm animals down. You know, music, but rhythmic sounds have the capability of doing this. Human beings, because of our position, our more evolved nature versus animals or plants, or versus even a musical instrument, we have the capability of going to even higher levels and bringing that spiritual energy down through our voice, through, you know, the Om chant or toning that is the most common one.
So Om and Rama, and are there any others?
Well, there's 12 of them. You have to kind of start studying these things in order to
use
some of the inner ones. But the underlying energies that activate the different energy centers, I've captured them and put them on the CD. You won't hear them necessarily, but you'll feel the effects of them as you go through cleaning out each of your energy centers one after the other, you know, washing away the debris that comes out.
So it's you're saying it's a subliminal act?
Well, it's I don't know if subliminal is the right term, because it's a higher vibration than the voice. Everything has energy, and we talk about that. You have humans, they move around, that's the lowest, you see motion in the physical world. Your ears capture sounds at a certain frequency. Your eyes capture sounds at a higher frequency. But there are still frequencies that go beyond visual, you know, ultraviolet, for example,
mm-hmm.
is outside of the visual spectrum. And there are X-rays and there are waves that go higher and higher than that. And scientists, at least in the science that's publicly available or publicly known, they haven't been able to capture or measure these higher frequency vibrations that affect what's going on in the world. But you can be sure in some of secret military applications in that they're working on these kind of things to be able to master those higher vibrations and not necessarily use them for good purposes.
So it's like with the dog whistle.
Yeah, exactly. The dogs have the hearing capability of listening at a higher frequency than humans. If you think of it, it's also like the cosmic keyboard. It just keeps going up higher and higher.
That's what they say, if you pray in tone, your prayers are heard faster, or they go reach heaven. You know, that's a childlike explanation, I guess, reach heaven. But where it's supposed to be going, what would you say if you pray in tones? Because I was at the Edgar Cayce Institute once, and someone said if you prayed in tone, like if you did the musical scale, do, re, mi, you know?
Right.
If you prayed in that tone, that your prayers are heard, and they reach the heavens like 10 times faster, like in a nanosecond.
Well, yeah. I mean, they reach heaven. Everything can reach heaven. The amount of power is a function of your intention, of how clear and your clarity, your intention, and then how much energy you can put behind the prayer. If you just say, "Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name," and you just start reciting the Lord's Prayer in a routine, rote manner, that's not going to do you anything.
Like the rosary.
Right. Same thing. But if you actually think of whatever it is, or compose your own prayer. It says, please let my brother be healed. He contracted it, or he got hit by a bus, or whatever that happened to him. Please, God, those prayers have a much greater effect because it has more immediate and is clear exactly what you want, and you're putting your true essence into the words.
And now, what if you put tone to that prayer?
The tone isn't so much. The tones are more for cleaning out your energy centers. You can, the clearer you are and the more, the better a projector or a receiver you would be for energy, for the higher energies. So it would help you. It basically, clearing out your energy centers helps you do whatever you do.
Okay, so what do you do? I mean, I know we're going to talk about your book in a second. What do you do? I mean, do you have another job outside of being a spiritual warrior?
I do business consulting, but I'm trying to get far more and more removed from that and switch over 100% to writing and doing talks and teaching people about how to manipulate energy, to improve their health and to improve their life.
And how do you manipulate energy? The way we've been talking about, like clean out your body first?
Cleaning out your body. Well, and that would involve eating the proper foods, try to eat, don't eat man-made foods, eat natural foods whenever possible.
What do you mean, man-made?
There's these fake fats and artificial sweeteners and things like that. Those are, you're putting toxins into your body that, again, is just slowing you down. That's just another obstacle to overcome to be able to achieve this, commune with God, or, as other people refer to it as being coming self-realized. You don't want to put anything in the way of that, if that's your goal.
Are there a lot of people out there like you?
I attract more and more of them, like the law of attraction. This is what I do, this is what I think, this is what I talk about. And ironically, I was just checking my phone, the people that I called, and five of the last six people that I had called, which are some of my close friends, five of the six of them had near-death experiences, for example. And it's not that I go hang around accident scenes or anything. It's just that these are people that have had their life transformed, in this case from a traumatic event to changing it to become more spiritual. And so naturally, I attract those people, and they're attracted to me.
So they had near-life experiences to show them they should be more spiritual?
Sometimes, yes. Your life path you're on is not the one you came to Earth to lead.
And that's what they were told during their... Because I do shows on near-death experiences.
Right.
I've interviewed many, many people about that.
Exactly. It's very common what happens afterwards. They almost always come back with greater psychic abilities.
Mm-hmm.
Love for humanity and wanting to help people.
Yeah, they're pretty. There's some of them are pretty cantankerous before they have it, and they come back and they're like, everything is beautiful, and they go way out of their way to be really, really, really good people.
Right. Well, I spoke at a group in Fort Lauderdale, the near death experience where they talk about this, and they invited me to talk, and I pointed out after I listened to their experiences, I showed how this is kind of the mystical experience that mystics are striving to have. Is like the near-death experience, only without all the trauma associated with it.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, the feelings of oneness, of bliss, of knowing things without having any understanding of how you could know these things, timelessness, being able to hold different thoughts in your head which seem to be contradictory but which make perfect sense of this higher state of being.
Now, you know, to a lot of people, you and I sound like we're having a Chinese conversation.
Yes. No, I used to be concerned about that.
Well, I'm not concerned. I just want you to know that, you know, so that's why I'm asking these questions. To try and, like, I bring up Tina Turner. I'm trying to bring it to, like, the real man's. Because we have to remember, one thing, when I first started, when I was a young reporter at CBS, they used to say to me, Mark, dumb it down, dumb it down. Because, you know, we can't expect everybody to know what we're talking about all the time, you know? And so, I don't mean to dumb it down, but, you know, we have to, like, because you'll get real, it's not, I don't mean lofty in a bad way, but you'll be up there, you'll be up on plane number 10, and they're way on plane number 1.5, going, huh?
Yes.
You know, so you go and you talk in these near-death, you have, you speak at near-death experience venues or
well,
seminars?
Well, that one in particular was the Institute for Near-Death Studies.
Mm-hmm.
Or International.
And why did they ask you to come there?
Because they thought it would be interesting to show the parallels between the mystical experience and the near-death. What I just found out, from my perspective, the near-death people, they've had mundane lives, you know, traditional lives like everyone else.
Yeah.
And then they had this traumatic experience. They went to this world where everything is connected, there's all this overwhelming love, and everything's great. And they don't know how to bridge the gap between them. And the people that they knew in their regular life have no idea what they're talking about. And sometimes they're afraid to even talk about it.
Yeah, they're embarrassed.
Because they think people are going to think they're nuts.
Most of the time they do.
Right, but that's my point is, look, you know, I actually made the joke. I said, okay, now that you're all here and you've had this experience, you should all become mystics and understand how you got there so that you can bridge the gap and realize it's just a continuation of, it's a continuum of experience that gets you to that ultimate level. And if you were at that level 24/7, then you would be self-realized. It would be the equivalent of being a self-realized man, God-realized, enlightened, illuminated, whatever word you want to use that all the religions point to.
Why did you become a mystic? When? Were you a little boy, decide you, or did you just something happen to you? Or what happened?
When I was a very little boy, one thing that happened was I had an out-of-body experience when I was 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I still remember it vividly. I was sick with the mumps or measles or one of those diseases.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting on the couch watching TV, and I looked into the kitchen, and I saw a coffee cup. And I looked at the cup and said, why am I me, not a coffee cup? And I popped out of my body, and I could see all the way into the kitchen through the archway. And I was exhilarated, but I was scared, so I popped right back into my body again. And I had that mixed thing. It was like, wow, that was cool, but that's scary. What? But I wanted to do it again, so I just had my new mantra. Why am I me, not a coffee cup? And I popped out again, only this time I looked around and I saw me sitting on the chair, sitting on the couch. Then I got really scared and I popped back into my body. And I was just so terrified I never explored it until, you know, many, many years later.
But why did you say you want, why were you in a coffee cup?
I don't know. I mean, what kind of five-year-old kid even thinks these things?
I know.
No one in their right mind would, but then we already determined I'm not of my right mind.
Well, none of us are who believe this stuff, apparently. But scientists confirmed that we are in our right mind. In fact, they call it we're of a higher mind. I'm not putting myself in your position, but people who believe in this kind of stuff, we have. They say we have a higher mind, or some people say we're crazy. But anyway, so then that happened, and then what? Did you go to traditional schools, and did you have great point average? Are you a smart guy? Or
I was a good student. I was a mathematician. And
there you go. Highly. Now we're talking.
Went to business school. I worked as got an MBA. I worked in the venture capital business, and I was leading traditional, you know, life.
Yeah.
You know, successful, and I had a girlfriend that said, "Hey, you know, let's have dinner and a movie. Go to Blockbuster and get a video." And so I went to Blockbuster, and I had seen the recent movies, and I see this one that says Dick Sutphin's Past Life Regression. And I pick it up and say, I never heard of this. This is only $2 instead of $3. I think I'll get this one.
Oh, God, you the venture cap. You're supposed to be giving me money. Yeah, you're not supposed to be going, oh, $2 as opposed to $3. I was married to a venture cap, man. You're supposed to be like going, oh, let's give him $5.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I come back, and we pop it into the VCR. And I'm watching it. It's like on Star Trek where the star fields come by and they kind of hypnotize you.
Yeah.
And then Dick Sutphin, he was one of the early pioneers in the human consciousness movement.
Mm-hmm.
He took us through a guided meditation, very relaxing. You know, your feet are relaxed, your ankles. And he has a
hypnotherapist.
Very soothing voice.
And your girlfriend did this with you, by the way.
Yeah, she did this with me.
What?
And I went into this altered state, And then it says, okay, you know, go back to a lifetime that has relevance to this lifetime. You know, you're 15 years old. You know, what year is it? And, you know, I came up with a year. And they said, what's your name? What country? And you're just asking all these questions. And I knew what year, country, you know, all these different things.
Okay, are you going to share? Are you going to share?
Oh, I won't say exactly what I was because it's considered bad form.
I know, but are you going to share? Like, I mean, did you know? Did you two talk about it? Did your girlfriend talk about it? And I mean, did you guys share? I mean,
yes. After the fact, she went to some lifetime in China many years, and she wasn't Chinese, but went many years earlier. And I went to one in Europe in the 1500s.
And did you stay? I mean, can I ask? Are you two still together by any chance?
No, we're not. Well, that's funny you mention that because I went to the bookstore and I researched and saw that this was a real lifetime. This is what people wore. And again, I was a mathematician. I had no interest in history or social studies, things like that. I wanted to understand science and finance and that. So when I saw this, I said, okay, I have this knowledge. And, you know, I obviously didn't get it from reading or my own studies. You know, I came from somewhere else. I need to study this. But before I went and started studying it, I popped the video in again the next day when my girlfriend wasn't there. And one of the questions I had overlooked was, very often in your current lifetime, people from your past life will be there as well. You know, so look around, see if you recognize anyone. So logically, I start going through my family, my brothers, my parents, my friends, and then I get to my girlfriend, and a whole wave of knowingness hits me.
Was she your mother, your sister, or something?
She was my wife in this lifetime. And so I knew, and she didn't look the same, but I knew it was her. It wasn't like a vague intuition or this.
Oh, yeah.
It was like I knew.
Yeah.
So...
So why? So you said no. One lifetime is enough.
Well, with her, I guess it was enough.
And so you just no. I'm serious because when my second husband was gone, he's a venture cap. He saw me and he said, "You were my wife in many lifetimes, and I want it again." And I know. I mean, I knew him instantly. So for us, many lifetimes being married is cool. So this lifetime didn't work out for you too.
Yeah. Well, I had to teach her something. In that old lifetime, all her power came from being married to me. And in this lifetime, she was making the same mistake, not from marriage, but she worked for someone who was the president of a big hospital chain, staff position. And I she's kind of aloof and would tell people, you know, Dan said to do this. And they didn't like having someone lecture them. I said, well, why don't you make friends with these people and make your own, have your own power base instead of worrying about Dan as the ultimate authority telling them what to do. And she didn't. Dan left, took in the job with another hospital chain, and the new guy that came in didn't have her in the same esteem, and so she had no power whatsoever. And so that was the lesson she had to learn, is don't, you know, take your own power. Don't rely on someone else to give you the power. You know, it's a good lesson for anyone. You know,
so and it is. And so, but the conflict came, and so you had paid your karma, or you'd given dharma, karma, however, which one you do, we had to give each other, and that naturally went away. So, right?
Right, exactly.
And sometimes, and then did you find a new relationship?
Yes, I've had different relationships, and sometimes I've discovered they were my wives in other lifetimes, or I had connections with them, and, you know, we went on our way, and right now I don't have a girlfriend, but...
Well, see, the reason I ask is because a lot of people go to these past life regressions, and they get skeeved out because they're like, whoa, that was my father before, or she was my mother before, and they lose perfectly good relationships because they get a little too kind of cuckoo. Am I wrong there, or are they wrong, you know? Because I've done interviews with people.
You have to live your life in the present. You know, you're not going to change the past by reminiscing or thinking about it too much. That's one of the reasons why they encourage you not to share too much with other people, you know, your subjective experiences and past life remembrances, because it may or may not, it may influence people in this lifetime.
Yeah, that's just what I just told you about. I've seen people break up when they've gone to regressions because they've been brother and sister or something, and they feel kind of weird about it later. So
right. That's
why I asked, did you share? Are you going to share? Are you going to share? Because whenever I've done documentaries on it, I hear the pros, you know, the people who lecture about it say, and you know what? Keep it to yourself.
Right. No, that's a good advice.
Keep it to yourself.
Your own insights and learn from it on your own.
Because everyone around you has been something to you. They've been different things to you in many lifetimes.
Right.
Mother, father, lover, husband, brother, whatever. They've been a child. You know, you've all played different. Like my children in this lifetime have been my parents. And they're giving me a little bit of a taste of what I gave them, apparently.
Right. They're getting their revenge by being
Yeah.
Good.
But it's my karma. But so you have to get to understand that and really embrace it and be able to laugh about it. You really do. I mean, because right. sometimes it's not very funny.
Oh, yeah. No, I know what you mean. I mean, yeah. in this lifetime, I had her head chopped off, so that I wasn't about to share that one with her.
Yeah.
It wasn't conducive to a good, loving relationship.
Yeah, and if you're really serious about it, which you are, obviously, and if you tell them that and they're not as into it as you are, they're going to get a little irritated. So people, when you have your past life regressions done, kind of keep it to yourself because I've seen a whole lot of breaking up over things like that.
Right.
Haven't you?
Oh, I've seen it, yes.
Yeah, it sounds funny, but I do laugh about it, but it's not funny. Not when it's happening to friends. I've seen it happen to friends. Okay, so you've done your past lives, and then so you like that. And then you start getting into it more, and you left the mathematician coat behind you?
Yes. Well, the mathematician, I kept the logical thinking and the critical thinking.
I can tell by the way you speak. You're very logical. You're very precise.
Right. It's an advantage to be able to think and that, but not to be wedded entirely to just, concrete things that you can see and touch and be a materialist. That's not logical at all. Logical to know that there are higher vibrational energies that you have access to, and if you practice and you become good at it, then you can develop capabilities that most people think are paranormal or beyond believable.
So do you believe in the whole paranormal world? Like, do you believe in channelers and mystics? I mean, do you just believe in mystics? Can there be channelers and mediums and psychics? Is that against the mystics?
Most people develop their psychic abilities by studying mysticism, but it's not the reason to study, it's a side effect. By getting closer to God, you're awakening your inner senses, which are connected with these energy centers that we talked about.
Okay.
And you will develop your inner sense of vision, your inner sight, your inner hearing, which people are clairvoyance, clairaudience, clairsentience. It comes naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have people that are Reiki masters that are energy people and long-term healers and that work with my Energy Center Clearing CD, and they do it regularly because it enhances their psychic abilities.
Yeah, we did a show called The Healers. It was at Borders for years, and with Douglas Johnson, so he's no longer with us. But, when the Mayo Clinic, Charles Mayo, when they couldn't heal someone, they would send to Douglas Johnson. Charles Mayo would say, we can't do anything for you here, but go see this man. This is Charles Mayo of the Mayo Clinic. We have it on tape. It's on a show we did. And Douglas Johnson was the kindest, most wonderful man. And I would see him just put his hands on people.
Right.
I would just see things change. It was amazing to watch. He was a very good friend of Jess Stern, the author Jess Stern.
Yep, yep. Definitely.
All those people, I've been very fortunate to know them all. They've all been my teachers and friends, and Ruth Montgomery. So I've been really fortunate to have known all of them. But I have seen a little of this and a little of that. I have like a potluck sort of experience with everything. So you specialize in mysticism. Okay, so then you become, I was taking you through a little journey. So you want to know your cup, and then you leave your body, so you've been able to experience that. Then you did regression, and then you became a mystic, right?
Right, and I started studying from an intellectual standpoint the different meditation, mysticism, past life regression, anything that would give me an understanding of how the world operated. And from doing that, I met someone who became my first real mentor. It was a very short experience, but she was a very gifted psychic and was able to clean out my energy centers quickly so that I would be able to develop on my spiritual path.
Is she still around today?
She's around, but she prefers to remain anonymous, and I can't even get in touch with her anymore.
The reason I ask is that's a good thing, because we say it over and over, Joel and I, on shows and other people, I really get a little nervous about all the TV psychics and the TV people, because the really, really good ones are hidden.
Right.
That's why they call it a gift. They like to keep it as a gift and not a, it's not a show.
Right.
Even though we do, So usually you can't, the really good ones, they will come to you when you need them.
Well, they will choose you. You're the master will choose the student, not the other way around.
Exactly.
You can't sign up for... If she chooses you, then you get to go.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. But I mean, I'm not saying don't go to mediums, because we have great ones, medium Brian Hurst, and we have other people you can go to for comfort. But if you're going to meet an unbelievably exquisite master, they will usually contact you.
Right.
That's the way it usually goes. And then you get to see them for a little while, and then they disappear because, in my experience, they've always said, I'm not here to be, to be their crutch. They don't want us to make them their crutch. They want us to use our own power. They don't want us to give our power away to them. That's pretty amazing, because they're full of integrity.
That's one of the real mystic truisms as well. Your only real source of inner wisdom is your own inner master, master within, inner light, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
The kingdom of God lies within. That's what they're talking about.
Okay, so then you get your psychic. She meets you. So now you're on your journey. I love your little journey. And it's not, I don't mean little, but, it's interesting, your journey. I love it, especially that when you're a mathematician, because you guys are so, you just have to, everything has to be, all the periods have to be there, and the slide rules and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so then, after that, you decide to become a mystic. You've obviously achieved that. And now you want to be a writer. So now you write Spiritual Warrior. And why should we read Spiritual Warrior?
Mystic Warrior.
Or Mystic Warrior.
Yes. Well, what I wanted to do was share my knowledge that I had gained from mysticism and that, and show how it does activate, awaken your psychic abilities, and how these skills are being used in today's world.
But warrior doesn't match with, because that's a negative word. That's a fight.
Well, yes, it is a fight. But we're in a war at the present, we'll get to how you overcome it. But just like in the physical battle, we have physical battles, we have legal battles, political. On the higher planes, we have spiritual battles.
Mm-hmm.
And the mystic warriors, the mystic who's actually fighting these spiritual battles to help uplift the world, while there are other people that are gifted psychically, that are using technologies and thoughts and things that are trying to lessen humanity's freedom. I mean, that's what some of the conspiracy theorists write about, and it's true. But the way to overcome this is not just from a war or whatever, or fighting. It's by rising to higher levels, and it'll transmute the thoughts and the energy of the entire planet.
Let me ask you, as a mathematician, a question. I asked Joel Martin. We do shows on Blog Talk, and we do shows on our site. I said to Jolie, why is it when you talk about the Christ energy or the Buddha energy or whatever, or Krishna, whatever, you never associate numbers? Well, you get the Trinity. But every time they talk about dark energy, the devil or Lucifer, it's 666. Why do they put a number with darkness? And then you turn the 6 over and it's 999. Nines are endings. Why? I'm asking you, is technology and numbers and all this, everything's a number and a code. I'm so over it. Believe me, I cannot stand it. But sometimes I think technology is evil. Why is there a 666? Why is there a number associated with evil and not with good?
Well, they can. The good one is the good number from my perspective. One is the all that is, the oneness. The ultimate goal of everyone is to connect with the oneness and be enlightened.
So one is the loneliest number. Remember Three Dog Night? You remember that? And really, in real life, if you're alone all the time, one isn't so great.
Right, but actually when you get to the oneness that we're talking about, you're both everywhere and nowhere at the same time, and it doesn't feel lonely. You're connected with everything, so it's a different kind of one.
Okay. It's a oneness with God.
Right, oneness with God and with everything, all that is. That is.
But is that kind of lofty?
It's lofty, but if you've experienced it, then it's no longer a theory. It's a matter of fact, and once you've had a taste of that mystical experience or that enlightening experience, then nothing else satisfies you. It doesn't matter how great the food is, if you have awesome sex, however much money, none of those things are where it's at. You want the oneness again, and you want it 24/7 like these Jesus, Buddha, Yogananda, Krishnamurti. That's what you want.
Have you had the oneness?
I had a brief glimpse of it, which I don't know how long it lasted because the time doesn't stop. And I said, okay, I want more of that.
Yeah.
So everyone would have that same thought. The same with the near-death people. They've had that, they want it, but they don't know how to get there. And I'm saying, look, study mysticism. These will give you rules and exercises to conduct to get back to that place. That's where you want to go. You see how great it is.
Where are you, Ed? What state do you live in?
I live in Florida, but I'm out here in Santa Monica right now.
Oh, you're in Santa Monica? Okay.
Yeah.
So you're in Florida. Are you giving a lecture in Santa Monica?
I'm trying to find a venue right now to teach people about how to use manipulate energies and improve their lives and that sort of thing from a mystic perspective. So I don't have the venue down pat yet, but if any of your readers want to learn more, they can go to my energycenterclearing.com website and sign up for the newsletter, and they'll be notified, especially the ones in the L.A. area. And when you sign up, you get five, it's actually now nine free lessons on relieving stress, overcoming fear, releasing anger, you know, different lessons that will help you pragmatically.
Okay, and I always like to give them your information. But then, if they buy this book, where can they get this book?
Okay, the Energy Center Clearing is a CD with a little booklet that describes what's going on and gives you pictures of your energy centers, a chart that shows you how they work, and some visual aids to help you show how you ground, clear off the energies, that sort of thing. That's at energycenterclearing.com. That's the sales page. That's the page where you get the free newsletter and the free lessons. And at the bottom it says learn more about Energy Center Clearing, and it'll take you to the page, energycenterclearing.com/E, C for Energy Center Clearing, .html.
Well, can't they look up under Mystic Warrior as well?
Okay, I'm from Mystic Warrior, my mysticwarrior.us website. That was my first website when I wrote my book. On the left-hand side, if you click under Energy Clearing, it'll take you to that same Energy Center Clearing.
I think they'll remember if you go to Spiritual Warrior, they can find the rest
Mystic
of that.
Warrior.
So, but
Mystic Warrior.
Or Mystic, I'm sorry.
Spiritual Warrior is a different individual.
Mystic Warrior, no, I don't know anybody named Spiritual Warrior. I don't know why it keeps coming in my head, but I think everything's spiritual, so you're a Mystic Warrior. Okay, so the book is about, it's not real life, it's you, is it you you're talking about in this book?
Mystic Warrior is it's a novel. It's a story of a 30-something entrepreneur who teams up with a spiritually gifted florist to save the world from a nuclear bomb threat.
Yikes.
The threat was engineered by a vengeful past life woman, and the way he has to overcome her and save the world is by developing his mystical abilities.
How come I didn't get a copy of that book? Everybody sends me a copy of their books.
We'll have to get you one right away.
Yeah, that's good.
Contact. We just met the other, a day ago, so as soon as I find out, get your physical address, you're going to get one.
Teasing you, So, because I like you, this horrible, hateful woman, she wants to ruin the world, right?
Right.
And no, but really, it's a novel about that. Seriously.
Yes.
And the hero would be.
The hero is Alec Thorne, and he doesn't know anything about this world until he's an entrepreneur trying to build up his company, and then he has all these setbacks over and above what the normal entrepreneur has, and he doesn't understand it, and he runs into this Sophie is the mentor, and she teaches him how to develop his spiritual abilities, including telepathy, remote viewing, astral projection.
Oh, I love remote viewing. Have you ever done remote viewing?
Yeah, yes. I'm not an expert at it, but I've had experiences where I've been able to do that.
Ooh, I've seen those people. They are unbelievable. But they're so guarded by all the military. The military snaps them up.
Right. Well, that's where you develop. But then a lot of them have their own courses in that where they teach you how to do it and use it in private industry and for your own use.
Well, you know what? I suggest people who are listening, they go to your website because you're very interesting. You have a whole lot of stuff to talk about. And do you have like a blog? They can be able to talk to you and contact you and all kind of stuff?
I encourage people to send me, once they sign up for the newsletter, it comes out roughly monthly, but there's a series of free lessons, whether you sign up at the mysticwarrior.us website or the energycenterclearing.com website. You'll get series of lessons, and then monthly you get newsletters with occasional sales letter mixed in there as well to sell books and CDs.
Okay.
To support myself. But I encourage anyone, if they have subjects that they'd like to explore from a mystic perspective, to send it in to me, and I have interactions, and not necessarily on a blog, but people that write in for specific questions.
I like the fact that you said to support myself, because a lot of these people who call themselves mystics and stuff, and they do call themselves that. I say that was exactly, I mean exactly what I said. And why are you laughing?
No, because mystic has such a, they got people thinking Dungeons and Dragons has something to do with mysticism, or people wearing purple turbans and that. There are mystics walking amongst in the world right now that you look and you would never identify them unless you were clairvoyant, you may see they may be glowing a little more. They may seem a little less stressed than the average person. They may be smiling and helping people. But other than that, there's no clues that tell them they're a mystic. They come from all walks of life. There's nothing about them that would identify them as a mystic.
But they're here to raise the energy of our planet, right?
Yes, exactly.
And they're not aliens.
They're not aliens. They're people that just have decided they want to become self-realized and connected with, attuned with God.
And they're not looking for thank yous and you know, billboards and venues in Vegas.
Right. It's the self, power comes from within. You know, you get the self-congratulations come from within, from the feeling of joy, not from someone else telling you, oh, that's great.
Well, I like that because, you know, as a kid I was taught, very simple lesson. And it's like if someone comes to your door and asks for food or if you see someone on the street to ask for something to drink, you just give it to them. But you should never, because you never know who you're talking to. It could be an angel, it could be a mystic, it could be anybody. I mean, it's right?
That's right.
It's just a really simple thing. When we were kids, we were taught that by the nuns. I don't know if someone taught us that. Some of those nuns were grouchy and mean old hags anyway, but still, they were supposed to teach us things, you know, whether they believe it or not, they were. But that's one of the things I remember. I thought, you know, just don't judge a book by its cover, you know, just don't know. You don't know.
That's what I tell people, but in my case, I tell them, judge my book by its cover, because I have two awards for that one.
Yeah, let's judge this book by its cover. It's called Mystic Warrior. Mystic Warrior. And it sounds pretty good because it's kind of set in today's, you know, evil little behavior with a hero. And we like entrepreneurs, since I married one great one who's no longer with us, Mr. D.C. Webster. And he was one heck of an entrepreneur, I'll tell you that. So, but no, I like this. It sounds like a really good book. It's out, you know, it's not schmaltzy. It's kind of like, it's sort of like Stan Lee's comic books, you know, like,
well,
Superman.
It's not a comic book, and everything that happens either could happen or, you know, did happen. So it's not far-fetched fantasy. When I was first trying to get it published, people would say, oh, what a vivid imagination, but too bad, we don't do science fiction.
Really?
This is really interesting, but we don't do fantasy. And it's, no, you don't understand. This is the way the world operates. It's just that very few people know about it. And that's why I'm peeling the curtain back so people can look and see how these remote viewing and astral projection and telepathy are being used in today's world. And the only people that seemed to get it were the people at the Independent Publishers Book Awards and the Nautilus Awards. I won a book, the Nautilus, you know, it's a more spiritually oriented book. I won a Nautilus Award for fiction.
We should call old books. Old books do nothing but spiritual books. Do spiritual publications. You know that?
No, I don't know that.
O, just a regular O, books. They're in England.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Well, we'll talk after we say goodnight. All right?
Okay.
So everybody, I hope you go to Ed's website and pick up this book.
MysticWarrior.us.
MysticWarrior.us, and it's Ed Pina.
Ed Spina, S-P-I-N-A, but you just have to go to mysticwarrior.us.
Mystic Warrior, and so we will, Mr. Spina, S-P-I-N-A, Ed Spina, and it's, again, we're going to say it again, so you don't forget, it is Mystic Warrior, because, you know, it sounds like a pretty good book to me. And you were most interesting. I took you on all kinds of little journeys. You had the good thing about you, you know something about everything in this whole world of metaphysics, don't you?
Well, you're trying to be well-rounded, so you can show how they're all related and how they're all it's all aspects of the one reality.
Well, Mr. Mathematician,
good.
You are a complete, not a zero, but you made you've come full circle. I won't say zero because the people don't know what that means, but you've come full circle. As a mathematician, we love that. You've closed your gap. So I really like scientists and mathematicians to come on and talk to me about this stuff, because people are always going, if a scientist would hear you, they'd go, you're crazy. Really?
Right.
Folks, we have one right here. Right?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Well, that's it for me, everybody, and maybe we'll talk again.
Thank you.
All right. Can you hold a second, please?
Sure.
Good night, everybody.